Netcasting from Chicago, Los Angeles, and Sydney, you're listening to this week's FX Podcast from FXGuide.com.
This podcast is brought to you by the new term at fxphd.com. Among the new courses this term, our new Katana Lighting Training, a world first with Matt Leonard. Included in that is free VPN access to a full version of Katana, along with many other key programs to help you learn, such as Arnold, Maya, Nuke, Cinema 4D, and many more. They're all there to help you take your career to the next level. Check it all out at fxphd.com.
Thanks for joining us for this FX Podcast. I'm Jeff Huser. The FX Podcast is where we talk one-on-one with top visual effects artists doing cutting-edge work. We dig deep into the technical side, advance the craft of visual effects, and pay respect to the hardworking people creating amazing work. We do several podcasts here at FX Guide, so be sure to check them all out at fxguide.com/podcasts. Today's guest is Pierre Ramon, president of Hybride Technologies. Hybride was founded in Quebec in 1991 and did visual effects work for TV shows, commercials, and in 2008 they were purchased by Ubisoft, the third largest game company in the world. So we'll get to talk a bit about gaming, visual effects, the industry in general. And speaking of the industry in general, I'm recording this intro on the morning of the Oscars. In a few hours, I'm heading over to Hollywood, which is, you know, honestly something I just would never do in Los Angeles, going anywhere near Hollywood and Highland on Oscar Day. But this year, something kind of special happened. Early in the week, Scott Ross, who, of course, you know, is the former head of ILM and the founder of Digital Domain, tweeted, "I had a dream, 500 visual effects artists near the Dolby Kodak Theater on Oscar Day waving signs that say, I want a piece of the pie too." Now, of course, this is playing off the fact that Rhythm & Hughes is the primary vendor for visual effects for The Life of Pi and is in Chapter 11. And I'm kind of used to these kind of things, getting a few likes on Facebook, a few retweets, and then nothing happens. But this time, something kind of magical is happening. Dave Rand, who many of you may remember from an FX podcast we did many years ago here, about the artists up in Canada on Journey to the Center of the Earth who didn't get paid. Well, Dave took the lead on this and started a groundswell that, as I record this, I see almost 450 people have RSVP'd to meet up at Hollywood and Vine during the Oscars. The media has been invited. They've rented a plane that's going to fly a banner over that reads box office plus bankrupt equals visual effects, VFXUnion.com. VFXUnion.com, of course, is the site set up by the union to inform artists what the benefits of unionization would be. But the rally is not really a union event. It's just one action item. The protest seems to be focused on business issues facing the visual effects globally. Like anything, trying to get consensus from the various people on the internet about what exactly the focus of everything is different because people have different interests. But in general, the focus of the protest is that visual effects business generates box office dollars. And meanwhile, visual effects companies are going bankrupt right and left due to a business model that's mandated by the studios and the unlevel playing field created by subsidies. So I'm working on a podcast where we can more appropriately dig into these. Maybe we'll get Scott Ross, Dave Rand, together and have a little chat, get into some of the specifics of the issues. But I just had to talk about this a little bit because I've never seen anything like this. I've been chasing the business issues at FX Guide here for quite a while, and we've done many podcasts with various people about the issues and problems, and I've never seen anything quite like this groundswell and Scott Ross's dream of 500 artists at the Oscars waving signs and protesting seems to be coming true. So we shall see. Anyway, let's jump now into this interview with Pierre Ramon, president of Hybride Technologies, with our Mike Seymour.
Pierre, thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. What I thought we'd do, I'd love to do a little bit of the history of the company and how you've were purchased by Ubisoft. And then I was hoping to get into the bulk of the discussion, which is your views on the industry and, of course, your perspective on the perhaps parallel, perhaps a crash course of a crash direction, I guess, between films and games.
Okay. I might start with a little bit of history of the company. We opened Hybrid almost 22 years ago, which is quite a long time for a VFX company. We always amazed and surprised that for all, and you also, all time that you're checking your demo reel, you realize after 2 years, roughly, the growth and how you improved yourself. But it's still a company that was started at the time for advertisement, because 22 years ago there were no system that on which we can pretend to do film resolution. Like, we start on advertisement strictly for roughly 4 years. But because we opened the first digital suite in Quebec here, we were tremendously used by a marketing company to do commercials with multi-layout without losing qualities at the time when digital. But you need to realize that the founder of this company were coming from a previous company where we were specialized in VFX for video, for documentaries or station package, and we were coming from digital. Like, when we opened Hybrid, we opened the first digital suite, and soon that we find a system that is that was giving us freedom to pretend to the film resolution. It was Flame at the time. We bought the first one.
So you actually, but you opened in an age of sort of digital mixers, and I mean, I think the same as you. I started with suites that were digital, but they were running tape machines through digital mixers, but very quickly went to Flame. But in doing so, if I'm not mistaken, you went from the real-time world of sort of not fully able to be realized visions to a much more richer experience, but it was dropping out of real time. You were into data and processing times.
It was mainly, obviously, I came on VFX at the beginning where everything was analog. But I was a young engineer trained in digital that started his career in analog, because obviously the digital at the time did not reach video yet. We were barely starting to write things in machine controls and with language that were practically not existing at the time. But very quickly, when the video started to catch up digital-wise, start to catch up for the video field, it was good for my generation, because I had the chance for 7-8 years to learn analog quite deeply at the time. But soon that digital catch up, I were back home and feel more comfortable to start to use equipment that were from where I was trained for, digital-wise. And obviously, at the time, you have a very good point. Processing was not something we were used to, and they had companies like Quintel, if you remember that one, that were very much real-time oriented with all of the equipment, because they were coming from a broadcast kind of mentality. And on the other end, you had Flame that were pretending to do that pretend to do roughly the same thing, but ready to pay the price for the processing time if it changed something as a visual impact on the screen. And obviously, there's no big... it's not very difficult to realize who win. The processing time was providing us with features and visual impacts that were not achievable by a real-time piece of equipment. And this is when, obviously, process and paying the price of a process time was not a price that was too high, then people were really willing to go for it.
So there was that shift from analog to digital, but there was also a shift even, because I mean, I was behind the first Flame in Sydney, and even in those days, it was Flame sitting as an island in a tape machine world, because there was a whole nother transition that you had to make to just basically losing the tape machines and going data, wasn't there?
Yeah, and also during the same period, there was all of the 3D graphics environment that was pushing at the same time. Like, all of these technology produced a tremendously big change where we move from editors to artists. And from a human point of view, it was also a really big change, because the first reaction we introduce a new technology for a human being is resistance. You have people that invest so much time to learn things that they're not willing to give it up for a new technology or new approach. And you find that reality in all of the field, audio field, photographic field. You still have the same thing from film cameraman to HD camera, from film to HD camera. You find the same thing when I was working in audio, from the analog audio to the digital audio. And everything changed very rapidly because of the technical push. When we start Hybrid, we start with a company that from scratch was strictly only digital, at the exception of the deck, which Betacam at the time, or the piece of equipment that we were forced to maintain to give our output to broadcasters. Like, we did that for the first 4 years, and after that, after we bought the Flame, we realized that there was a big change coming in advertisement, and we took the decisions to move, to slow down from the advertisement and to move to crisscross from advertisement to film industry. You need to know that at the same time, we have a division which was an R&D division. This is what the name of the company called Hybrid. We were some kind of bridge, and we want to design our own software and use it, and we start the production side of to be sure that we can test our product from the R&D division. But very soon we invest probably enough money in the production division, and it start to move very rapidly that we were forced to take a decision. Are we going to slow it down and to protect the R&D division, or we are going to open the valve entirely and check how far we can go with the production company? And this is the decision we had to make, and we decide to push and to open the production division and to not stop it. And just after that, with the Flame, we start very slowly to work on film. The most important one.
I was going to say 300 was a really pivotal film for you, wasn't it?
Very important, but I think the key, the first thing we had done was a Mimic with Guillermo del Toro. And I think it was our first introduction on the Hollywood movie. And after that, I should say that this was our first benchmark was all of the Spy Kids series, because being in Canada, we had different ways and different approach to do things where the price quality ratio is not the same. Like, we're able with a small budget to reach a level that Robert Rodriguez need. Like, I will say that our first benchmark corporate wise was the Spy Kids series, and after that, with the same director, it was Sin City. That was the second benchmark that has a decent impact, visually speaking, in the industry. And from Sin City, 300 came with another need for another image impact for a film that was entirely from green screen, shooted in Montreal. Like, these were the main three benchmarks from the company, which obviously were used slowly but surely to giving us a chance to propose post-production technique and solutions to filmmakers. And we were coming from the video industry and the digital industry for so many years that obviously our goal was to propose and push DIs and every kind of visual impact that can be post-production produced instead of using real-time shooting with filter from camera. Sin City and 300 are the exact example for that. It was these projects were coming from green screen shooting, where all of the environment, also from the 3D graphic department, start to generate these environment from scratch, and integration, where we start to create a specific impact, visual impacts that are not the same for 300 and Sin City, obviously, but are quite unique for these two films.
So in 2008, you become the film division of Ubisoft. How did that come about? Like, who approached who? Did you run into each other at a party? I mean, how did that just...
Well, it's very curious because we are in the Laurentian Mountain, which is not far from Montreal, 45 minutes, something like 60 kilometers, roughly. And we were obviously observing Ubisoft in Montreal, working in games. I will say that there are some kind of two parallel industry that will cross each other no matter what. They're not really working. They're working in parallel, but they don't have a development which is following a parallel track. They will meet each other down the road. And they came to us after 300, realizing that our public was the same, and the people that were watching 300 were the same people that were buying their games. And they were very interested to be connected to company that can be involved on image processing to be able to improve image impact. And they were very pleased with the result and very impressed with 300. Like, they decide to propose us to connect with them and to join our force on some kind of R&D work, because we were very fan of the games that they were producing. And the opposite was true on the film that we were involved on VFX-wise as a main vendor, which was the case for 300. And after discussion, after 10 months of discussion, we realized that we were very close mentality-wise to each other and have exactly the same philosophy. And when you want to start to push the R&D tremendously, you reach a point where corporate-wise, Ubisoft is a 4,000 people company. Hybrid is a 100 people company. Like, the size between the two companies is so large that it was difficult to move further. And having us, I will not use the expression protected, but at least comfortable to continue to use with the, to work with a huge company like that. Like, we came both to the decision that it might be interesting to join force, because we were interested, and we still, obviously, working with them on visual impacts and different project and R&D project with them. And on the other end, obviously, we were, after SimCity in 300, starting to realize as a VFX company that we might participate and have an important impact on the film that we're working on from our work. And we say we like to be more involved, if it's possible, with the storytelling part of the project. And you don't necessarily have that chance when as a vendor, you're working to produce VFX for a company, for a studio. And we realize that Ubisoft are a company that are story generator. They generate story, they invent a specific world. And for us, it was a natural connection with them to serve that purpose. So we want to move out of the straight kind of a service providing to do VFX for film. We still continue to do that, but we want to increase our capacity to be involved on the storytelling part and on the R&D part and move further. And after discussion, we realized that they were the solution of where we want to pretend to be or to go in the near future.
Because I guess
joint force.
Ubisoft has got a reputation for producing incredibly rich fiction with very strong narrative arcs. I mean, if we think about Assassin's Creed, I mean, this is just much more than a game that has cut sequences followed by some first-person shooter. This is this really has a narrative. And so you've moved from being a vendor that's sort of providing, you know, guns for hire to being associated with the company that's actually coming up with and owning the stories, which is a really interesting position and obviously a more creatively fulfilling one. But today, do you exist as an island that is the kind of film division of Ubisoft that's sort of off to one side that just handles film when stuff comes up? Or is there just a whole bunch of interchange behind the scenes on projects? I know you've done Assassin's Creed, the 2009 live-action project.
Lineage.
Yeah.
Lineage. Yeah, well, obviously, we still self-contain as far as the service providing to the Hollywood movie, because we agree on both as Ubisoft Montreal and Hybrid in Laurentian Mountains that it will be important for Hybrid to still very connected to the work in progress of American movie from Hollywood, and we don't want to give up on that market because it's giving us a chance to be in track and in tune with new techniques and connected to many directors and many studio, and it's interesting for Ubisoft, obviously. Like, we have that part of the company that's still up and running, and we're working on 4 movies at this present time. But at the same time, we produced Lineage for them, which was the introduction to permit to Ubisoft to learn more about the film industry, generating, obviously, you know the project I'm referring to, Lineage.
Absolutely, which was, yeah. The three-part.
Exactly, the 3 shorts that were broadcast on YouTube. And the idea was to be able to do an exercise, an R&D project, but Hybrid is very pushy to do R&D project that will, at the end, conclude with a real product that can be broadcast and be used in the real field. And this is why these 3 short movies were done. And the idea was to use all of the environment imported and created by the game directly in our CGI world, and start from that to put some people from green screen on top to do a story that will prepare the people to the next game.
So as I understand it, that's live action actors, and a lot of the assets are exported from the engine into your XSI pipeline for that?
All of the assets were imported directly from the game. Like, the idea was we wrote some software with them, and we still continue to do that on a much higher level that you will probably feel and see soon. And what we're doing is we start to bring back all of the work that was done from them as far as environment generation and modeling and all of that, and to re-import that, including texture, to our CGI pipeline. It can be Softimage or Maya as far as we are concerned. And we start from them. And the idea was to be able to tell to a gamer, you see the fight in Lineage. If you want to go in the game and find the street, and you're patient enough, you will find exactly the same building in the street where that happened, because it was directly imported from the game. And we still continue to do that. We moved that much further now, and the software that was written for that still used between different games in Ubisoft internally. And we are trying to generate some high-end interface between different worlds. And this is what the project was about. It was very pleasant to do. The shooting was entirely done in Montreal in 15 days, from all of the actors entirely on green screen. And then we were up to close to 600 shots on that project of a tracking camera on an environment that were entirely provided by the game. Like, it was the purpose of that R&D project, and this is how we came with that, with these three shorts, that you can connect to each other and have like a 30-minute story. That is giving you, obviously, a pretty good idea and a good preparation for the game which is coming after.
Yeah, this is 2009 that this project was done, and it was really interesting. But if we move to today, I'm just curious, that is still, I guess, game assets being imported to a film space with a film narrative and a film structure. And I was wondering if I could get your opinion on this, because do you feel like this is like a window to maybe see that a company like Ubisoft can take their properties such as Assassin's Creed or Ghost Recon and take it into the feature film world? Or is this much more complex in terms of sort of starting to explore where the boundaries are in storytelling? Because you could go the other way, of course. You could take more of the non-linear approach, and you could, as other companies are doing, short films that then lead into, for example, additional downloadable gameplay and stuff.
There's many tracks that can be used. You cannot. This is one track that was used as far as the R&D project, where the film and the game industry are connected. There's more track than that. You have like interactivity that you can generate between the film and the game. At the beginning, people were thinking that they bought hybrid to be able to help as part of the visual impact. Well, it's true. We're working on that, but it's a technical part of. It's not the most complicated one, because you will, with a new engine, as far as the game engine is concerned, having more power to deal with, and we can apply technique that we're using to improve. But the game company are going to improve themselves no matter what. What start to be interesting is the storytelling, the way also that the game storytelling is going to be done. But they obviously don't have the same reality that a film, because when you're going to a movie, you put yourself on some kind of passive mode when you are open to have a story that people will tell you with no interactivity. But when you're moving on a game, the first thing that you are taking away to the director is the framing and the editing. The gamer is the one that is going to frame the game where he will like to be. And the editing, obviously, the way that the story is told, it cannot be done the same way that obviously it's done in film, where the director has the entire control. The other thing you realize down the road is a game is a result of a collectivity. from all of the engineer, artists, and programmers that are involved in the game. And it's a more a collective result than you will have on the film. In film, it's true, obviously, that a lot of people are involved to produce the movie, but it's under one person, which is the director, that is controlling literally everything. Like the result is an effort from a collectivity, but the visions is coming more from one singular person in the film industry, and that is slowly changing. I'm working with on film right now where I see cooperation between people that is influenced by the game structure for the best. And the opposite is also true, where the film industry is very, very well organized to deliver, and a film can be produced in a small amount of time, where a lot of people are going to be involved. But what I am interested in is the storytelling, the way that obviously people are using tool. You were referring with two tools that are used to tell story that the games industry start obviously to use and build around. You start to have the same director. When I was working on the Spy Kids series, Robert Rodriguez was literally generating animatics and the entire movie by himself in his studio before he started to shoot any picture. Now you have tools that the game industry is using to help you to reach that goal. But both worlds are going to tremendously connect to each other, and sometimes using I would like to have a game which is a film storytelling that you can play with, and at the end have an entire cut, an entire framing of the movie that you would like to shoot after. But down the road, maybe you will not have to shoot the movie. Maybe at a certain point, you will reach a CG double or CG character that are going to be so good that some of the movie will be used with CG character that are that will be more believable than they are these days. Benjamin Button is an example of a CG actor that on the movie you start to believe very much in. Like all of these technology are start to as a cross platform to connect with each other. But it's obvious that the game, storytelling-wise, will start to improve themselves and have probably scenario that start to be more complicated and more in relation with movie, but also connected to a movie. Like, it's not out of a question to play on a game and after that to see a movie and to find a movie informations or different cues that are usable for you to go back on the game and to pass another step, and on the other way also you can think about a film that is going to be broadcast on YouTube, and if the film is broadcast on YouTube, you start to have an interactivity, and from the code that you find on the game, maybe you can go on YouTube and type the code and have access to another part of the clip that. And this one start to reveal new clue that give you back an ID to go, and you can start to think about interactivity between the two specific product that are not supposed to be connected, but one day they will be connected.
I mean, filmmakers are starting to use things like CryEngine's Cinebox and Valve SourceMaker Filmmaker to sort of use film engines to tell stories. But also, by the same token, you could argue, I guess, that episodic television and its knack in providing A, B, and C arcs that span entire series, rather than feature films, which tend to be obviously shorter. I mean, you know, a gameplay can run hours and hours and hours, and the only sort of equivalent in directed drama, I guess, is episodic television rather than feature film. But of course, you have all those reward structures, those compulsion loops, those badges, leaderboards, points, Easter eggs, etc., in the game that make it even more interesting. I'm guessing that at a technical level, though, if we jump down there for a second, that there's a point at which it's pretty similar, right? I mean, if somebody's doing modeling at some level, if they're doing texturing, notwithstanding the destination they're heading towards, the role, the guy skill sets are very similar, whether they're working in games, episodic television, or features, isn't it?
Yeah, but at the same time, both will continue to improve themselves. Every time that I'm looking about what the game company are doing, and including the results and the quality that we will reach very soon on PS4, as an example, we have more power to work with. People have the tendency to believe that the game is on its way to reach film, quality-wise. And I'm talking about VFX here for the moment. But people have the tendency to forget that the VFX world in film also is improving itself and generate things that we didn't even think that we might be able to do 10 years ago. On the movie that I'm working right now, and when I'm looking about the result we're getting as far that simulation, battles and whatever, the final result and the quality that we are achieving right now is 3 times better than what was done 2 years ago in the film industry. And I'm in that field for over the last 25 years now, and it never stopped. And I don't know where it's going to stop. Maybe one day you will see if it's photo realist. It's photorealist, and if the game reach a photo realism look, both of the party will reach their goal. But we're not there yet. That's for sure.
Well, that's why I started the discussion by mentioning the fact that when you very first started, you were talking about the idea of using early digital gear or analog that was real time versus offline rendering, which is what you indicated was Flame in 94. But that same issue of what you can do in real time versus what you can produce when you take a render farm is exactly what the game engine developer slash artist faces versus what the VFX film artist faces, right? I mean, you can just render for a lot longer when you're rendering for a film than you can render inside a game engine, which has to be real time.
Definitely, but you don't reach the same goal. I'm looking right now. Sometimes I watch a game, and I am amazed about the quality that is generated. The last Assassin's Creed, for an example, and suddenly, when I take a look at it, I turn around and I check. And, they are forced to generate 24 frames a second in real time. And they achieve amazing results. But if at this stage of the game you are comparing that result with an output generated in film and VFX from CGI in the film industry, it's still a huge difference because we just don't stop and wait that the game is reaching the film industry. Down the road, it probably will start to be very close to each other. But none of them are stopping their improvement, and the film industry is very pushy. Now, and 10 years ago, I was not generating environment. I was shooting everything in life on real environment, and I was inserting 3D model inside of this environment where compositing integration was the key things. Today, we do the opposite. We generate an entire environment entirely in 3D, and we put some real actors from green screen, mainly for the acting or for the where in you will reach the same goal when and we introduce them, but in the 3D environment, which is the opposite of what we were used to do. But acting wise, there are also the performance capture side of a real actor that you're doing for game and film, same technique, and you are using that to apply on your CG character that is going to represent the actor or whatever actor you need for. But where all of these techniques are going to push us? For the film, you might have a new movie with John Wayne in 2 years from now because they will find somebody that will play the character of John Wayne, and in CGI you'll be able to generate a real photorealistic one, and suddenly you will start to have a film with an actor that doesn't exist anymore. And in the game, you'll use exactly the same technique to produce a CG character that will be better and more believable. But why? Well, let's talk about emotion. It is not an easy thing to generate a real emotion moment that will change your life on the game. there's some movie that changed people from before the movie and after the movie, and after they were able to move you on some specific emotion that you never had a chance to have before, or even believe, or even know that still exists, and that changed people's personality. The game industry is a very new industry, but let's say it's 50 years old when the cinema is 100. But the main difference is cinema start to move very rapidly, but it had opera before, it had theaters before, and acting. The game has all of that, but also the film industry is drafting the path. And it will not take the same amount of time from the game industry to reach and high level. Their limitation at this stage of the game is more coming from technical limits, because all of the other approach, other technique, other way to do, other creatives, including directors for films, when technically speaking will be easier and less limited to generate games, you will see a lot of people start to move from one media to another one, including these days you have some directors that are very much interested to participate to a game, and they want to give a creative input to that.
Can I ask you're in a really unique position with obviously a great view into the game industry and a great view into the film industry. As a senior member of the industry and somebody that's been, you know, at the forefront of it for decades, do you see, from an economic point of view, the film industry or the game industry as genuinely healthier economically at the end that you're at? I mean, in terms of not box office, but, you know, in terms of providing work, providing, you know, income, being profitable in an environment where, of course, we've got some real upheaval going on, especially in south of you in North America.
Oh, you have a tricky question there, because from the I cannot take away the or remove the hat from guys from VFX, obviously. And I want to talk about the general film industry as a filmmaker and generating a movie where VFX are not involved. Like, I keep myself literally on the VFX side of, and as amazing it sounds, and to see a movie where the quality of the production is very high these days, you're still observing that company that were responsible to generate them are suffering from a financial point of view to not be able to stay in business. At the moment we talk, a month and a half ago it was Digital Domain, and last week it was Rhythm and News. You need to realize that you're dealing with a company that just generates Life of Pi, and a company that drafts obviously the path of a CG animal at a level that people had a hard time to believe it can be achievable, and it was done. I do believe that the game industry. And your question was from a financial point of view. I think the game industry are in better position at this stage of their life that the film industry is, because VFX company has to do some major changes to be able to readjust financial incomes, obviously, which is not enough to maintain companies up and running properly.
And is that because the game companies...
It's sad.
Yeah, but is that because the game... Well, is that, I'm just wondering if that's, in your opinion, because the game companies own the assets that their engineers and artists turn into properties, whereas in the VFX world, the studios or the filmmakers own the property and the providers are not in any way normally participants of the actual intellectual property of the film.
Well, I think that you're pointing one of the main reasons, and I cannot be more than agree with you. The main situation is VFX and company are generated by service providers. Games are mainly companies that own their IPs. But there are also some comparables. Let's talk about Pixar as an example.
Yep.
Where they are a production company, which is VFX-wise or graphic-wise or production-wise self-contained. But at the end, the film industry is not exactly working the same way. And for the amount of film that is generated in 1 year and studio and the way that this business is structured, I think it is possible to have some VFX company that continue to offer a service. It's just a question to readjust the way that the model is done. That being said, I will open the door to another point of view, which is now more and more present in the industry, is from the production company to start to ask to VFX company that participate from an equity point of view in the movie, and this is maybe a new opening for a new way to do things. I don't think you will find Pixar is a company which is dedicated on a specific style and kind of movies. But studio generate different kind of movie. They have movie that are requiring a very small amount of VFX, and they have other studio, obviously, that are generating more VFX movie. But I will say that from an advertisement point of view, it's possible for the advertisement company to do commercials that are not VFX driven. They can readjust their concept and not using, let's say, VFX because they're suddenly too costly. And it happened in the company. At the beginning, people were ready when I start in this business because you want to build your reel. They were ready to do commercial at 60% of the income to have something to show on their reel. If you remember that period, we yep. were all using from the reel, and including the director and the producers from the advertisements company were telling us, come on guys, just let do it. It will be good for your reel. And we generate a decent amount of work for a fraction of the price that it should be. And we pay the price of it, and many good company disappears because of that. And what happened is when they did not find companies that were willing to do that anymore, concept-wise, they changed their approach and they have commercials that were not VFX-driven. I will not say that you can apply that reaction to the film industry. I think the film industry and VFX in the film industry are there to stay. Mainly because they're not only VFX that are connected to the wow factor category where it's a VFX movie. Now you have VFX on most, if it's not all of the movie, and many of them are seamless. They're just there sometime to reduce price production-wise for the movie. And I do believe that it's a big, big change. But down the road, a solution will need to be found to permit the VFX company to continue to stay in business and to be able to propose their service in production that the producer need and at a certain price, which is proper for both parties. A good deal is a good deal when it's good for both parties, and it's not necessarily the case in 2013, apparently.
Yeah, and I guess there's obviously a lot of other factors, the difference between the film industry and the game industry. But one of them is, of course, that a lot of activity happens in the film industry based around subsidies and government assistance. And when governments get involved, they tend to influence things in a way that's a bit sharper and a bit in greater relief, I guess, than what happens when you've got just the market exposed. But are you optimistic about the film industry looking forward, the VFX industry, or is it sort of a pessimistic picture?
No, I am optimistic because I'm looking and I see a problems right now that it start to be obvious for everybody. And it will need to be addressed and adjust, and probably the VFX company that are having a hard time at this stage. The hard time is mainly financial. On the other end, you have different things that can be made from other corporation VFX-wise, where it's easier to subcontract things like stereoscopy from Indian company or Korean company or Chinese company or rotoscopy, where you need a lot of people that are put themselves involved to generate the math that you need to reach your goal. Today, it's very difficult to compete, including us. Sometimes we are forced to subcontract some rotoscopy to other company because it's more profitable for the movie to do so. I will say that it's very promising because from a technical point of view and in our artistic point of view, one I'm very happy is the VFX now are there to stay. They are not only used as an asset for the movie to be able to reach your goal from a technical point of view. We, I do believe, sometime have the chance to participate to the visual impact of a movie, to the and I'm saying on 300 and Sin City, we were very lucky to work with directors that were open enough to propose us under their vision to participate to create some look. When you sit and you watch a movie, you have a different feeling about what the movie is about because of the post-production VFX implication. And this side of our business is making me very optimistic.
Yeah, it's ironic, isn't it? Because it's not as if no one's using visual effects, and it's not as if visual effects aren't achieving their creative goals. People are using it. It looks terrific. It's just not making money at the moment.
It's difficult to make money at the moment, and it makes me sad when I see people that are working so much. Take the example of Rhythm and News, and it's not normal on the same month that you have a movie like Life of Pi that you are reading on the web that they felt Chapter 11, something in from the outside, obviously, I'm not the inside. It's a company that have a very good reputation to be well managed, and it's one of the company which is there for a long time. I'm sensitive to that because our company here is there for 22 years, and who am I to say that? I mean, I'm now part of the company, which is Ubisoft, very open-minded, that are giving us resources. Just in Montreal, there are probably close to 1,000 engineers, software engineers, that we have access to. For us, it's a very, very big plus, and I'm very pleased about the move and the decision we had made 4 years ago. On the other hand, they are in the process to put, obviously, deal together to generate an Assassin's Creed movie for the market which we're going to be involved. Okay, for us, it's very hot, but it's the sadness that I have is how can you have an industry that is doing so well, creatively speaking, that is really pushing every morning that you wake up, you know, to generate some result that are amazing for the people that are going to see it in theater and watch it, and realizing down the road that two of the major are in difficulties. It makes me sad. And a solution will need, obviously, to be fine, because I do believe that the film industry need VFX in their movie and high-quality kind of VFX, obviously.
Well, it's been incredibly informative and incredibly interesting talking to you, so thank you so much for taking time to talk to
us. But you've been there for a long time, because you know exactly where I'm coming from.
I do, yes. I've enjoyed watching your work. It's been great to witness, and it's been great to talk to you. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
All right, well, thanks to Mike and Pierre. I want to ask you to please check out our FX Insider program. The FX Insider is our membership program that offers exclusive access to content and expanded articles. It's a way for people who care about visual effects and the work that we do here at FX Guide to help us continue and do more. Details can be found at fxguide.com, and then click the FX Insider tab. We do a couple of podcasts. You've been listening to the FX Podcast. We also produce the VFX Show, which reviews visual effects and current releases, as well as classic films. The RC Podcast covers the ever-changing landscape of digital cinematography. We also produce a high-definition video podcast, FX Guide TV. You can find all of these, along with in-depth articles, news, and more at fxguide.com. And don't forget to check out our sister site, fxphd.com, that offers online visual effects training that's first class. That'll do it for this episode. For my partners, Mike Seymour and John Montgomery, I'm Jeff Huser. We'll see you on the next FX Podcast.
Please let us know if you have any suggestions for stories or future podcasts. You can reach us by clicking the Contact Us link at the top of the homepage. This podcast is copyright FX Guide, LLC. Broadcast or redistribution is prohibited without the expressed written consent of FX Guide.